All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your Saturday show where we get to talk about things that are happening in tech. It's an exciting time to be alive around tech. A lot of you, you know, we sort of started this program, you know, back when a lot of you were swearing off even using tech, whether or not it was, you know, privacy concerns or you fell out of your element or you just like paper better. But we got involved with this demographic. Those of you who listen to this station are included in that. And we tried to boil things down and give advantage to the expertise that was in this audience. And a lot of you like to dabble. You are DIYers. You like to solve problems. You used to use your hands and get things done without, you know, you became experts at things by trial and error and experimenting. And that was great within this because technology does lend itself to that kind of interest, right? A lot of us will crack open a package of a new device and figure out 50 ways to use it in our environments. And sometimes you win and stuff is just awesome. And sometimes you lose and you waste a little bit of money. I mean, one of the first things I did as a brand new, you know, when I first started getting interested in computers, a little bit of my history. Let me go back a little bit before that. So I was the 13-year-old or 12-year-old kid that had a Commodore 64, and I was writing in BASIC, writing little applications that did stuff like, hello, what is your name? And you type in your name and then it uses your name and says, hello, Joe, what would you like to do? Hit one for blah, blah, blah. Hit two for blah. And I wrote programs that created interactions and menus between computer and human being. And I loved that. It was one of the coolest things. Like I would make a computer program that would ask me a bunch of questions and then it would return results and do what those questions asked. And it was like choose your own adventure game for using a computer. Now, granted, back in Commodore 64 days, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff that you could do anyhow. There were some games that you can play. There was some command line games. There were some sprite games. There were some pretty good like simulation games. I remember one of the first flight simulators was on a Commodore 64, and it was quite good for the era. But anyway, that was the interest. You know, for my 13th birthday, I spent pretty much all day. I got there used to be a Radio Shack up on Belmont in Liberty, and you could go to this Radio Shack and you could use public domain software. You could bring your floppy disks in. They'd allow you to go through their software catalog. You'd make a copy of what was on there, and then you can go get some free programs to play. You know, and they just let you sit there for as long as you want, making copies of all of their software on the anything that was public domain. And part of that was they had text files that would have programming. And so what I started doing is just using programs and then word for word, getting a piece of paper off of a dot matrix printer in front of me and copy it line by line, line by line, line by line. And every once in a while, you'd run the program to see what it does, and then you would learn some of the functions. Like I wasn't learning programming from a book and learning the variables and learning how to do it. I was basically writing someone else's program and through trial and error figuring out like what all the commands did and then translating those commands to writing my own basic basic programs. And so that was my history. And so the first endeavor was I was heavy into writing my own programs and playing games. And then I got my dad had purchased a Packard Bell, my first IBM compatible or Windows machine. Going back, there was internet during the Commodore 64 days. It was Quantum Link is what it was called. And it had a little, you know, 9600 baud modem. You dialed in and you could do stuff like chatting and playing poker and stuff like that. It was really crude. There wasn't much to it. It was very, very, very expensive. They charged you per minute. And I think they gave you like 60 minutes per month for like $30. So super expensive. So after that, on my Packard Bell, I was in the pet hobby, right? I was raising iguanas and stuff like that. And I wanted to open a pet store. And so when I got my first Packard Bell, I started dabbling with using the internet and using the internet to be able to distribute pet stuff like pet supplies and animals and stuff like that. I wanted to breed my own animals and whatever. And I started using that first computer to build a website for a pet store. And here was me like going up to TW Pet Centers in Liberty and going into their dumpster and reading labels off to see where they bought their supplies, and then going to those distributors and seeing what I would have to do to be able to buy these supplies. So I never opened a pet store, but I went full rehearsal with doing dumpster diving and doing like very analog version of opening a pet store. But that was my first endeavor into using these tools to open a business or do commerce. After that, I got really good at building computers, and I swear to you, every person that wants to apply for a job with Youngstown Computer, number one on there is I built my own computer. It's almost like you have to pass through that door in order to be, you know, a computer person. But I'll tell you that I spent, there was I think it was called motherboard.com, was one of the few distributors or retailers that would sell individual components to people. Because this was way back in the day. I mean, I think the first machine that I bought was like a Pentium or a 66 megahertz processor. So we are going back quite a ways. And so that my history with that is that I got really good at it. I spent way too much money. I bet you, like, I put it all on a credit card, but I bet you in the end it probably cost me three times as much to build my first computer because of how terrible I was at it. But I feel like, you know, some of us that don't do the whole college thing well, that we pay the same amount of money, but we do it by being wrong a whole lot and making mistakes a whole lot. But it ends up being the same amount of money. We just go about it in completely different way. 330-729-9977. Let's talk to George. George, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Yeah, this is kind of getting interesting. Now, you say you started with computers when you were about 13, huh?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, and before that, you were interested in pets.
Pets,
and you
yes.
thought you wanted to open up a pet store.
I did.
Okay, now, let's suppose from the time you were like 5 or 6 till 12 or whatever, were you ever interested in anything, any kind of hobby where you had to build something?
No, I was so mechanically deficient where I made lots of attempts to build things with like wood and painting things and metal, and I was just really terrible at it. It really took a vulnerability with me, and I had to go total digital because my mechanical skills were awful.
Yeah. Now, like, if you were in a store and you saw something built out of an erector set, would you say, man, I'd like to build something like that?
Yeah. In fact, if it was prefabbed where I didn't have to construct it on my own, assembly I was great at. Erector sets and electronics kits and all that kind of stuff. It was awesome.
Oh,
but
you
if I had
electronics kits?
Yes.
Now, what did you build out of electronics?
So it was like they had like 1,000 different electronics products where you'd hit those little springs and the wires and do like little radios.
Radio
and
Shack.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, that was good. That was good. But sometimes I worry that everybody is just too computer and too on the keyboard and surfing around and doing all this, and they're not actually building stuff, you know? Like, there's a lot you can learn by, like, I remember in high school, we everyone got a kit. We had to build a radio, and this is when they had tubes in them, you know? So you started off, you didn't know what you were doing, and you were supposed to read the book, you know, and wire everything underneath, and then you put your tubes in, and you learned a little bit there, you know. I think that was good. I don't know if you ever built a radio.
No, I haven't. And a question for you. So, like, when I was a kid, I really didn't have mechanical people around to show me this stuff, so there was really nowhere I could go to learn how to do it. Now, in your generation, who was your teachers, or how did you come by the information to know how to build stuff?
Well, I took electricity, you know, and in electricity, everybody had to build a radio. This was in the high school. They didn't have vocational yet, you know. Yeah, that was you took wood shop. You took it right in the high school, you know. And there were some really excellent wood shop teachers. I should have taken wood shop, you know, to learn a little bit more about stuff like that. But it does worry. Now, see, I'm deficient in computers, Like, if you sit me in beside a computer, you know, I said, hey, where's a book that shows how to work it? You know, I just can't get it, can't get past the difficulties of computer manipulation and the internet, you know. I didn't go that way, you know. But it does sort of worry me that we're just too computer now, you know. I don't know if you know what I mean, but yeah, like when kids used to build tree houses, they'd get a bunch of wood from someplace, or when people, and they'd build a tree house and a tree in the back, you know, and they learned a little bit about what you had to do to make a good tree house. And I mean, kids today just don't build anything. I don't know, maybe I'm way out there, but that's my comment, you know.
All right, George, thank you so much for being out there, and I'm with you, and I was one of those people who there should have been concern that I never was able to put together, you know, that skill set. And as an adult now, and this works really well for me. As an adult, I'll take a Saturday and I'll watch a YouTube video about someone who knows what they're doing, take you step by step doing something. We'll use a mailbox, for instance. Like, I would have never in a million years known how to put a mailbox together. And it sounds, most of you who are mechanically inclined, a mailbox would be a pretty simple project to be able to put up there. But me, it wasn't easy for me. I'm a guy who's like, if you told me to dig a hole, put a post in there and put it on there, it would have not been done well. But then when I took somebody a video that explained not just how to do it, but the methodology, like why you do it a certain way and what this serve function serves, it's a 10-minute video that I could pay attention long enough to be able to get what was out of it. And it might have taken me 3 hours to watch a 10-minute video going step by step. But I'll tell you, I've got a mailbox at the end of my driveway that I did myself that hasn't started leaning, and it probably would pass muster with someone who would critique it after knowing how to do it. And that I'm assembling in this as an adult, some of the stuff that I don't even know as a kid how I would have put that together, just because the, you know, society and culture has changed to the point where you don't need to do those things. It's just it's become easier to get those things without having to do it yourself. And so, you know, I share your concern. And another way around, too, there's a lot of you that are functioning in society where society is going heavy into knowing the digital side. And if you don't know it, you're going to be, you know, you're going to feel at a huge disadvantage as analog disappears and digital becomes more prevalent, even more prevalent than it is right now. A lot of you that don't know it are not going to. So I oftentimes I'll take, let's just say I didn't as a 13-year-old jump into computers and learn about them when they were more simple than they are today. If I had to dive into them right now, I wouldn't know the theory of how they think because I would have never programmed one. I would have never given them an instruction set. So really what it comes down to is a computer is doing an assembly of millions or maybe billions of really, really small things super fast. So I think of a computer more like a, you know, you have those flip books that will take you through an animation and make a video happen, or a, you know, a set of animations happen just by flipping it. That's sort of what a computer does. Very simple, simple, simple things, but when they're done super fast, end up being, you know, look very sophisticated and complicated. So computers get faster, they can do more stuff because they can do even smaller tasks more fast to make it seem like they're sophisticated. And it's no more than that, honestly. So a lot of you who feel like technology is escaping you, it's only because that you're seeing things in its most complicated form, and it's hard to get premise and practicality behind something that has evolved ahead of, you know, getting understanding of it today. And a lot of you who got involved earlier have a little bit better handle on it because they saw when before it was so mature, and it was easier to see what they were trying to accomplish, because before it was more terrible, but it was more understandable. Now it's more seamless, but it's harder to understand what's really happening there. And that's why you got to, like, let me just trust the people who know. And that's even a harder thing. That's why a lot of you have sworn off the technology and said, I'll just do it by paper, because paper, you understand. It's simple and it's understandable, and you trust it more than the stuff that is, you know, takes somebody else's involvement in order to have a true handle on. So, George, thank you for that call. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the history stuff. We haven't done one of these in a while where I kind of give you my, you know, my experiences from day one, and we'll kind of keep fast forwarding until we get to current. 330-729-9977 or text me 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. And this is fun, kind of talking about historically what constituted Joe Danier, kind of moving throughout history. I was a weird kid who, from the very get-go, had interest in computers and business. And then as an adult, I ended up doing business and computers. So who would have thought? Last caller, George, we were talking about, he had concerns about the next generation not really having much in the way of being able to build stuff, which honestly, I think in the long term, it's going to put even a higher value on people who do know how to build stuff through different vocations. And I honestly think the next deal, I think vocational training is going to outpace academic training. I don't think public schools and colleges are going to do quite as well, especially now that we do so much stuff remotely and Joe's doing all of his learning by watching videos and watching experts practice whatever I want to learn about. I just think education is going to be a different thing in the future. Somebody on Facebook said that George and I should get together and I'll do his computer stuff and he does all of my building stuff and we will find a homeostasis between the two of us. So that was an interesting comment. Thank God for social media. Have you noticed, like, it's after the election stuff happened, people got back to just being snarky and funny and silly. And we started returning to the, sort of like the value, the entertainment value of checking your social media once a day. It's not just all this vitriol and whatever. It's getting fun again. So thankfully, those people, nobody on my timeline has bailed out and moved to different countries and stuff like that. So I'm grateful that all of you are still out there to entertain all of us with the wit, humor, and snark that I've come to know before all of this happened. So anyway, I hope all of you are sort of enjoying some, family time and time at home and maybe, going into this holiday, you do start to do a little bit more experimenting with some of the tech that's out there. Every day I get asked, like, going into the Christmas season, what the heck are you buying and stuff like that. And I remains the same as last week. I was asked this, and I'll say it again, super quick, that there hasn't been much in the way of innovation cycles. From a consumer standpoint, you have basically only so many articles that you could go through. You have your device, the portal that gets you to all of your stuff, like your computer or your tablet or your phone. And jury's still out on which of those is going to end up winning. I foresee in the next couple of years that there won't be many physical desktop computers or laptop computers. I think between tablets and phones are going to be our ultimate winner. You can watch the way that people even view and watch content. You will see that about 75% of the stuff is being done on a mobile device of some kind. So a lot of you in, every demographic is moving towards those mobile things. But as far as that, you have your device to get to the internet, then you have the second thing, which is going to be the getting on the internet together. So here's another thing. Like, most of us buy our internet from an internet service provider that services the utilities of our house, right? With satellite and wireless technologies, will you all, like, okay, as a consumer, if you pay $100 a month, which I do for my internet for everybody to use at my house, versus going to a cellular provider or a satellite provider and paying the same amount of money, would you have someone run a physical cable to your house, or would you just have internet plugged into all of your devices? I have an iPad. It has a cellular card built in. I have a phone. It has a cellular card built in. So when I'm at home, I'm not using my data off the cellular card. I'll use it off of whatever. But there might be one day where everything just kind of connects to the internet and doesn't have to, like, change around to a different internet. It's all going to the same spot. And I think we've got some redundancy where in the future, devices are just going to know how to get to the internet, and the internet's going to be a controlled utility like anything else. And again, just a guess, but I think in the short term that maybe getting to the internet, we'll have to decide whether or not we want physical wires or it to come in some other way, especially when you don't have to spend the infrastructure to run cabling to everybody's house. Think of it this way. You have a wireless signal that you can pick up with an antenna from anywhere, and then you can get all of your programming, your TV, and all that kind of stuff in over that wireless device. You saved yourself a whole lot of building and extending infrastructure and justifying infrastructure and making exclusivity with certain companies to get infrastructure. And I think it changes things a little bit. So kind of looking at that in the future, once like Starlink, which is Elon Musk's version of internet, and then you have all the LTE and 5G providers with cellular companies, you kind of see it coming. And I think that, you know, the Armstrongs and the Spectrums are going to lose the hold on what they have now, which they're losing the programming, that they're not the exclusive dealer in what you watch or listen to anymore. And then they're going to lose the infrastructure where you're going to have choices other than the cable that runs into your house. That's just, again, looking trajectory and what's likely to happen. Nothing against any of those companies. I just kind of see the writing on the wall. 330-729-9977 or text me at 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show, your show where we talk about things that are happening in technology. It was kind of cool the other day. I went on YouTube and I followed the rabbit hole on 80s ballads. And so I played a whole evening, hours and hours and hours of just old school 80s rock ballads. And it was kind of cool because I was thinking how easily we can access anything we want to listen to. And usually it doesn't cost you anything. You know, simple advertising, like if you have YouTube Premiere, which is the paid subscription, I think it's like $10 a month. You don't have any advertisements, but don't want to pay any monthly fees, you can just listen to every couple songs they put up a 30-second ad, and then you just, you know, do the advertisement that people are willing to pay for, subsidized by the advertisers. But either way, just how close we are to having all the information you could ever want at your disposal. And I don't care if it's music or, you know, how-tos or walkthroughs. If you compare what it used to be with how it is now, there really isn't an excuse for you not to know something. I can see, like our previous caller, where, you know, you don't have a skill set that is developed, but having a lack of information, there isn't really an excuse. And we're in an era right now where misinformation, fake news, all of that kind of stuff is really prevalent because of the accessibility of how easy it is to get to people and to inform and to put information. I mean, there's no pre-qualifications for being able to put information out there. So it might be good, it might be bad, right? And there's no oversight, or there isn't anybody that gets to, to regulate it, which is a blessing because you get information as it pops out of people's heads. But the accuracy is now up to you as the consumer of the information, whether or not it's good or not. And what that lends itself is that there are certain parts of certain pieces or portions of our communities that will believe anything they read on the internet. And you probably know some of these people who will do that. And so there's a process of trust. Where, you know, who do you have trust in? Do you have trust in the networks? Do you have trust in political parties? Do you have trust in elected officials? Do you have trust in your neighbors? Do you have trust in your friends? And all of us sort of have a tolerance for who we extend trust to and who we don't. And when we're lied to, that trust kind of dissipates super quick. And so, like I said, the blessing is that there's lots of information. The curse is that there's lots of information, and we have to know how to throw and wield what we do for trust. Because there's some of us that will trust anyone. Someone could show up at your door, and you'll instantly trust them. And then you have guys like me. You showed up at my door, and I don't owe you anything, and you need to go away. And so I'm going to dedicate some time on a Monday show. I'm going to be filling in for Ron Verb on the 30th. That is the Monday following the vacation or the holiday week. And I'm going to go in and talk about how we levy trust amongst people who are supposed to be trustworthy and we are supposed to be able to trust in. But it's one of those things where we're at a crossroads now. Where do we like having unfiltered free exchange of any information, or do we not? Is it worthwhile? Do we want less information but make it more accurate? Or do we want more information but then we've got to parse through it on ourselves? So I'm going to go really down the conspiracy theory boulevard because it's not necessarily, it's fun to do. I mean, there's whole radio networks that are dedicated to conspiracy theories. There's whole, even one on the station, the late nights, there was George Norrie was that for a little, you know, on here for a long time. And it definitely has a following. And the people who consume this stuff aren't crazies, right? They're people that, if you've listened to some of the guests that they have on there, all they're basically doing, they're doing the same thing that we do, is that they're taking things that might sound fanciful and they're willing to listen to it long enough to start constructing to see if it has data. And this is, it's actually a practical process for disseminating what's true and what's not, right? And so we can learn a little bit from that whole process, because if you see, there's a lot of people that were, once you have sort of like a bias for the information that you consume, that you've already sort of decided, in spite of any new information, what you've already decided. And that's a dangerous thing when it comes to information, because there's so much of it, and it's so, it comes out new. If you shut out stuff that might be true, you might be living in older, you know, you can't do much with the information that you have. And so I'm going to detail a whole lot of that during that program about how you as citizens need to be objective. I'm going to say that word again, objective, meaning that you have not yet decided what is true and what is not, but you're open to any information. And because I'm that guy who come from a science background, right? I just want to know what's true and what is not. I don't need embellishment. I don't need anybody advocating for a certain end. I don't have a thing in a fight. Remember, from a standpoint of technology and business practices, I always sort of situate myself so I'm operating through the eyes of my fiercest critic, right? That's what keeps me honest in my field, is that I have to look at everything as if my fiercest critic were looking through it. And I have to decide not on what I want or think. I have to look at my critic, someone who's going to pick apart every one of my actions, feels about what I'm going to do. And it gives me a level of honesty that I wouldn't otherwise have. And I do that with my information too. So I don't think of things from a political standpoint of whether or not I want somebody to have power. I think of a power that we're going to give to somebody that maybe I don't like. What if XYZ came in there and wielded that same power that I just gave to the governor of Ohio? Would I want them to have that? And it kind of gives a different perspective. And so we're gonna do the Monday political show from a science guy's, a critical, cynical, objective science guy. And it should make for a very interesting discussions, because and no matter when I do these shows, somebody's going to be pissed off at me. It's because I won't join a team. All I'll do is I'll talk about this stuff and be open to this stuff, and from an academic standpoint, you know, try to decipher and analyze it. But I haven't decided any of this. I'm always open to it. So if you think aliens have already invaded our country and are amongst us, I'm open to it. All I need is a little bit of science-y behind it, right? Tell me some science-y and I might be on board. But I'm not going to already decide that it hasn't. I'm already decided that it hasn't. I'm ruled by objective science. So 330-729-9977, and that should get people's blood flowing on that Monday. But I wanted to bring it up because it's relevant in how we consume the media today, and it's a skill set. Like, who do you outsource trust to? You outsource trust to your internet service provider that you're visiting websites and they can see where you visit. You trust that they're not going to ever tell on you that you went to whatever site, or they're not going to give away information that you would rather not them have. Do you trust the search engine that you type all of your stuff in to not accumulate data and tell on you? Do you trust your car not to tell the police that you're speeding, or tell the police that you broke some rule on the rule on the road where you change lanes? What would happen if all of our technology started telling on us? We wouldn't trust it, and we'd probably get rid of it. So as the guy that wants you to embrace technology, the side of it that security professionals fear the most is that it turns on us and we don't want it in our lives. Like, what would happen if all of our stuff started doing that? We didn't trust it, but all of our stuff is already ingrained. I think an earlier caller that was saying, you know, we don't build stuff, we rely on digital. As long as it's working, digital was a great idea. But the minute that we don't trust it anymore, it's going to be a really terrible idea. So what's the alternative? We closed up all of our stores because we did all of our shopping online. We shut down newspapers because we got all of our information online. Once you go the other direction, it's going to be really difficult to rebuild what you had before. So we got to be pretty certain as to what we want out of this. And if we don't want to drive down the road and go shopping in person, then you're cool. Let's shut them all down and let's just buy everything online. And then the people who send your products don't ever have to put it on a shelf and demo it unless, you know, the rest of the marketplace likes that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we'll definitely relay that information to them and somebody will do it. And that's, like I said, that's sort of like the status. I think that we have not yet decided. We're still outsourcing our trust to people who have not yet broken it in a way that is forcing us to escape or get rid of it. But we're getting to some byproduct that some of us aren't, you know, real keen on. So 330-729-9977. Let's go to Tom. Tom, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hey, Joe. A couple of weeks ago, I had a big update on Windows 10. And ever since then, when I go to check my email or my bank account, I have to put either my password in or the one account. I got to get verification every day. What am I missing here?
Okay, so what browser are you using?
Oh, I guess it's Edge. Like, is that a
okay.
browser?
Microsoft Edge? Yeah. And so
okay, that's what I'm using.
Okay, so you and a million other people after this update are suffering a little bit with those changes, and we've kind of kept a bead on when things are going to get a little bit better. The two things that happened were printers got really messed up, and then like you're mentioning here, the ability to save passwords without having to authenticate has happened. And what we've had people do is because there's no real answer at this point. We've had people start using maybe Firefox or Chrome, which uses different mechanisms to be able to save those passwords. And in the short term, if you can get your banking to be able to use Chrome, I would, in the short term, for the next couple months, try using that until maybe they release the next update that satisfies the problem that's happening right now. So that'd be my best guess, is to just download Chrome, start using that for your banking, let Chrome save those passwords, and then if you really want to use Edge in the future, give it some time to get that thing fixed.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your help, Joe.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate you being out there. And it's pretty common that what will happen is that when you do these updates, they do bug fixes. They use vulnerability patching, right? And then sometimes it changes the behavior of things you do, like opening programs or going to certain websites, or in this case, like saving passwords. So after we have a big one, though, usually, you know, you're not going to be the only one that's complaining about this, so that by the next update, it might go back. I like the fact that Edge has come a long way. I think it's become a much more sound, compatible program. I still don't use it a whole lot on its own. I'll give you an example. So I use all three browsers on a computer, right? I will use Firefox, I will use Chrome, and I will use Edge. And the way that I use these is, let's just say I have a Gmail account, right? If I have a Gmail account and I log into it, if I have a different Gmail account, I have to log out and I have to log back in, right? If I have different browsers, I can log one browser into my one Gmail account, and I go to a different browser and log the other browser into a different Gmail account. And depending on which one I have, I can have them both open at the same time and I don't have to switch between them. And that happens a lot when you have, you know, my personal stuff versus my business stuff, which is, you know, some of my operational stuff. I might have three accounts, so it's nice to be able to log three different browsers into three different email accounts and keep them all open. I just have to remember which one does what. So in this case, I have started using Edge a lot for some banking. I have not had the problems that our last caller discussed about not being able to log or save accounts. But sometimes it'll happen after they run an update, even on phones, that you'll have to log in again. And what he was suggesting was that the browser were first attempt to see if you've ever used a computer to log into that site before. And if you haven't, it'll send you a text message or do a second factor to make sure that you are who you say you are. And then it will grant that browser permission to log into the website. And that's just, if someone hacks your password and they log in from a different computer that it's never seen before, that's an attempt to stop someone from being able to get in there. So we want that to happen. It just so happens that whatever update happened, that the identity of that computer is being masked, so the website can't see if you've ever been there before, and then it obviously forces that forces that challenge every time you come to the site, which gets annoying. So we like it, but again, if it's not functioning, it's not helping us any. So that's the official response here, is buy some time till they to get something fixed and use a different browser, you know, for a period of time. The second part of that is password management. Now, this would not help Tom in Tom's situation, but we see it enough that most of us are not doing passwords the way that we should. We're making the mistake of either using an unsophisticated password like password 1234, or we're making all of our passwords the same. We actually had a customer who had a password hijacked, right? Where what this means is you're cruising along and a page pops up that says banking or FedEx or credit card or something pops up and says, hey, your login went inactive, log in again. And you're like, oh, I use that bank, and then the login. Well, that pop-up that happened wasn't really their bank. They just took a gamble on it that was, you know, a bank that a lot of people use, and you just happened to see it and gave them your password. So once they had your password for that bank, then they tried that same username and password across all of the platforms. So you just didn't get hijacked for that bank. You got hijacked with every other website that's major, that's national, when you gave them that one password. So a lot of us use the same password on multiple sites, which is a no-no. And so using some kind of password management tool has been really effective in my world here, because a lot of my passwords, I don't even know what they are. I install LastPass on it, let the browser component make up a password, and then it saves this ridiculously long, sophisticated password. And then as long as I'm logged into my computer, it logs in for me, and then I don't have to remember or write down or manage that. I just have to make sure the password on the machine that's using LastPass is, you know, complicated enough that somebody just can't walk up to it and then have access to all of my websites. All right, 330-729-9977. I'm going to read text messages when we get back from this break. So if you want to get those in, it's 333-1570. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. Thank you, Dave Price, for that one. Keeping it real over there with some Mario Brothers. 330-729-9977. You can text me at 333-1570. This is the Computer Show. We talk about things that are happening in tech. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer. If you have some computer services that you need, you can call the number 330-259-7278 and leave a message there. Rich on the residential services will get back in touch with you and get something scheduled. And commercial services, 330-259-7278, same number. Option one and option two is all that you need to square here. Love the show. I had a Commodore 64 computer in the 80s. I had a modem and used to hit up all the BBSs. They were bulletin boards. Actually ran one called the Warrior Cove. Talk a little bit about Apple M1 SoC. And there are a lot of us that got our start on the Commodore 64. And most of the components that we use today sort of had their infancy in that deal. Everybody got to warm up to what computers really would be. And you know, if you were a command line person and most of us who use computers right now need a graphical user interface. You need something to click on. You need something to move around. Spatial visual awareness is important to be able to accept, these interfaces. I mean, what you're looking at is basically a picture that's drawn over and over and over again that you can interact with and move a mouse around. And it happens so fast that it looks like you're immersed in an environment where you can do stuff. And we got familiar with it. And it's beautiful that these tech companies have altered, that perception and awareness of how to interact with computers. But, you know, I know a guy right now that can interact with a computer just as easy through a command line as I do through a mouse. He can actually do things faster through that, and it uses way less computational power. You can use less hardware and be able to get along. Now, as far as you're talking about Apple One, my experience with Apple didn't come until far later. I think my first example, like we had one of my friends had an Apple, and we played a couple games, but I never really messed with the Apple. I want to say like the first one that I had, I used to, There was a company in town called Community Computing, and right out of high school going into college, I worked there for a little while, and he was real heavy into the Mac stuff. And I was more of an observer because I didn't know it. All my exposure was with Commodore 64 and IBM compatible with Windows, Windows 3.1, Windows 95, and further ahead too. So by that time, like I said, I was just an observer and I didn't know much about it. It wasn't I think an iMac was the first Windows, Mac OS X. That was my first interaction with it. We'd use it before then, but I had no expertise in the operating system. So thank you for that text message. I appreciate it. And all of us were kind of going back in time a little bit and being a little nostalgic about how we put stuff together and constructed it. Let's see. Hi, Joe. As far as using my phone instead of my desktop, I do when I am out and have no other choice, but I don't like it, and I prefer using my larger desktop any day over the phone. And I'm with you. And I'm telling you, when we were doing road trips over the summer and I didn't have a desktop, I did everything over an iPad and my phone. It felt foreign when I came back to my desktop and started moving the mouse around. Now, granted, I wasn't doing complicated things. I wasn't doing any graphics. I wasn't doing any video or audio editing. I was doing simple stuff like going to websites and making reservations and checking the weather and doing maps and stuff like that. But I actually got pretty intuitive to use the interfaces on the smaller devices. I have an iPad in front of me, and I bet you I use it more than I use my desktop. I'm just becoming more and more familiar with it. So I think thank you for that input, and I'm sure you're not alone with having a preference for a big desktop that can do everything you want it to do, but maybe our standards go down in the future and becomes more usable. 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is hour two of the Youngstown Computer Show, a show dedicated to helping answer some questions and, talk through some of the common problems that people might have and just talk about technology and science in general. We actually have two SpaceX launches that are ready for this weekend. I don't know. One of them may have already happened. I want to say that it was like at 12:30 on Saturday. I might be wrong. You might want to check it out. So, but there's a whole bunch of space stuff going on these last couple months. Very active. The commercial space exploration is off the charts. We got four different companies vying for dominance. SpaceX is definitely doing a great job. Very safe operation in ferrying human beings up to the International Space Station, if you saw. They have the reusable Falcon rockets. They have the Falcon Heavy, so they're pretty dynamic as far as what they can do and what they can send up. And you got to consider that Elon Musk in his major plan is to have Mars exploration. And so everything you see going on right now is gearing our capability up so that it's trusted and it's capable and we know a lot about it. And it's fully funded by the operations of what happens with satellite deployments and the internet service that they're putting out there with Starlink and the going back and forth to the space station and then eventually bringing someone to the moon. And so it's getting exciting. But today was, I believe, a NASA communications satellite was going up in one of the Falcons. And then Sundays is going to be another 60 Starlink satellites are going to be released. So back to back. A double header for SpaceX. So if you start, I'm sorry, SpaceX. And so if you like that kind of stuff, you can go to space.com or you can go to spacex.com. And both of them do these live videos where you can watch everything from the launch all the way to the deployment of the satellites. And one of my favorite parts, and this still gets me every stinking time, and I've watched hundreds of these things, is when the first stage rockets. Basically, that's the big rocket that helps the payload get out of Earth's atmosphere. And once that thing separates, it lands itself. So usually the first stage rockets in history, they land into the ocean and then they're scrapped, right? They're no good because once it hits ocean, it can't reuse them. But they're using the first stage rockets over and over and over again. And that was one of the you know, the problems that the private sector sees is when you have waste, to see if there's a way you can spend extra money to not have the waste. So if they can figure out a way, you know, you got, I'm making this up, I don't know how much it costs, but let's just say that tube costs $1 million, and then you add, you know, $1 million worth of technology that lands it, but then the technology saves, you know, 90 rockets. I mean, it pays for itself if you can successfully get the thing to be reused. And that's the theory of technology, where we make things more efficient over time. And then, you know, it makes sense to be able to use the same amount of money and go further and do more with it. So a lot of success with the space program. Kids are getting excited about, you know, when they ask what you want to do when you grow up. I'm sure that astronaut wasn't even a thing for the longest time. After the cancellation of the space shuttle program, there wasn't a whole bunch of kids that were setting their sights on space exploration because it really wasn't a thing. So I'm so happy that the private sector came through and added it back to the wish list for kids to dream a little bit. I watched on Twitter while this previous International Space Station launch happened, and kids were, you know, parents were taking pictures of kids dressed up in astronauts gear, and they were dreaming a little bit again. That's really important to the sciences, is to have kids that want to become scientists, and which means science has to be exciting and something that, you know, you want to work really hard to become. Physics and mathematicians and those guys are super, you know, super important to construct the technologies of tomorrow. And so, again, very happy that that's happening. So if you can, watch those broadcasts today and tomorrow, if it hasn't already happened for today, I'm not sure. Anyway, so I was kind of giving you a sort of narration between for Joe's life leading up into technology. And I mentioned that I had a Commodore 64, did a bunch of programming as a teen. Then I got into IBM compatible, a Packard Bell 66 megahertz machine. And I started dabbling in internet and web design. I had an idea for a store. This was so cool because it so happened. And again, this was in the infancy of the internet. So one of the first pages that I ever developed was a company called NICN, right? I made this company, NICN, National Internet Commerce Network. And I had the idea that I was going to set up a web page that was basically a storefront where people could go there and shop different stores. And because brick and mortar stores didn't know how to put stuff on the internet, I was going to go to physical stores, offer to host like 4 or 5 products per store. And then I was going to build this online mall where people can shop and buy from the stores that were local. So if anybody sold anything retail at the time, it was big stores. And it was again, there wasn't a whole lot of people doing e-commerce at the time. But I started going down to neighborhood stores in Girard, because that's where I lived at the time. And I started talking to Girard Hardware and a couple of different stores down there. And zero people were interested in putting any products on the internet because they thought I was goofy. I had no idea what I was doing, and I didn't get anybody signed up for it. But I spent a lot of time learning HTML and programming to be able to write a shopping cart, because they had a shopping cart, but you had to like really customize it and make it work, and you had to do the programming behind the scenes that made that happen. And I did that, but I had zero people that actually bought in to NICN. So what I did was, instead of making NICN an online mall, I converted that to NICN Computers. So I made a computer a service company out of the first failed attempt at doing an online mall. But if anybody of you knew me then and wondered what NICN stood for, it was National Internet Commerce Network, which was my first version of a failed internet startup that became a computer services company. So that's kind of a cool little factoid that not many people realize or know. And then, so after that little stint trying to make an online mall, I did a fair bit of you know, attempts at becoming a service provider. There was a lot of work to be done. I didn't have a whole lot of money. And my first office was actually a file closet. I didn't have enough money for a full office. But one of the guys that the owner of the Little Caesars franchise here in the Valley had an office in Girard. And I asked him if I could, you know, do like trade of services, if he could, you know, get me some office space. And he agreed that if I worked on some of his computers from time to time, he would trade that for some office space. But he picked out a little filing cabinet room, and it was just big enough to fit a desk across, right? So I had one desk, and I did all of my stuff out of this one little thing. And the people that worked with me at the time, this was an incredible time, because I thought, all right, I've got this, right? And when I look back on it now, I did not have this. And I was like working for less than minimum wage, and I was starving. And if I pulled in $50 in a week, I was so happy. But I felt like that was the beginning of everything that was going to happen. And then so fast forward, I put some customers together, and there were some big failures in between and big successes. And, you know, the lean times, I ended up working retail to kind of put enough scratch together. I did subcontracting work where I worked for other companies, some other better known computer companies. I did contracting work for them for a long time. And then I, you know, had enough customers on my own to do it on my own. And that's when Youngstown Computer came to be. So when people ask me like where I got the education for working on computers, it was everything that I learned was like one little step at a time based on a practical flexing of that deal to try to make some money to do this. And I assembled it. So like I tell you that I put a ton of most of the time into web work, and I've really never made money doing website stuff. Like I made some like little developments here and there, but I never did it professionally. And I had most of my education up to that point in web programming and computer programming. I've never made a dime writing a program. I've never made much money doing web development, aside from I did Dave Blaney was a NASCAR driver at the time, and I did all of his website stuff, his message boards and stuff like that. So I did make some money on that. We kind of partnered with some of the other NASCAR teams too to do marketing. And that's where I learned most of my marketing, through NASCAR, working with Richard Childress Racing and Bill Davis Racing. And they had actual marketing wings of their company. And just working with those people and seeing how they operated, I learned a whole lot from how they behaved and what they did. So some of my marketing chops came from racing. And then fast forward, like I said, I was a practitioner where I would just do, you know, working on stuff. But once I got solid on that, then it's about dabbling in new technologies and you know, and opening different portions of my company, like the assembling computers and the sourcing hardware and stuff like that. So I feel like when I said that, you know, the product cycles of development have kind of slowed down within the last 5 years, I almost feel like that's me too. Like in the last 5 years, where we did a lot of company growth and stuff like that, we didn't really innovate a whole lot aside from building computers, which I've done that in the very inception. So that wasn't really a groundbreaking, but I feel like right now we're doing the most groundbreaking stuff that we've ever done. But publicly, there's not much to see on the retail end. But there's, I was sharing some of my craziness on Facebook this morning about how I'm dabbling in some of Nikola Tesla's early, you know, experimentation with harvesting energy out of the magnetosphere. And I'm going to pick up where a lot of those, the reports of that experimentation left off, and see if I like it. I kind of know that I've shared my experiments with solar. I like sort of electronics anyway. So having cars that are real heavy in electronics and appliances that have, I've always gravitated towards that. So you're going to see a lot of making physical things. I started off 2 years ago with saying, you know, I've been a service guy. I've been solving problems. I've been fixing things, but I haven't made anything. You look around and the best I could do is assembling a computer, which doesn't take a whole lot of skill set to assemble those things. And so I'm going to put a lot more effort into making physical products, something that I can point at and say that was not just an assembly job. That's stuff that I made, and if it weren't for me, it wouldn't have existed. So there's the write-up from me at 13 years old running programs to what I'm working on now and everything in between. And I hope that's interesting enough for you to pay attention to over the last 10 minutes while I explain that. But I guess, you know, buying into our brand means that you buy into us as people. And I like to let you guys get to know me a little bit, so you know where, you know, what I shoot from. I don't think I'll ever be, as a business person, just sit back and be comfortable. I think I will always be, every time you invest in me, I'm going to be investing forward into making things better, more efficient, buying more into people, buying more in this area. I'm a big believer in what we have here in the Valley. And so I will keep investing into making it better and more valuable, especially the people. I mean, if we can get, you know, we're at a crossroads where technology and education cross, right? And so in the future, the next generation are going to be learning different than you and I learned. And so if we get to develop the technology that puts, you know, things in people's brains. Don't be scared by this, but the microchip that interfaces with the human brain is not too far away. Where there's a company called Neuralink, again led by Elon Musk, that basically connects neurons to really, really thin threaded wires and connects to a magnetic interface that's on the outside of the skull. And what they're able to do is upload and download digital data between the brain and the outside world. And what you're going to probably see is that the profiles that they create from the data, because just evaluating it would be in itself very, it'd be very amazing to see what the brain is even doing on the digital side. Because we look at it from measurements and instruments that tell us what it looks like in profile using analog methods. But this is actually the digital stream of information coming directly from the brain and what that looks like. It's going to be like a foreign language, but we're going to interpret it and find out, like, when you add stimulus of red, what really happens through the brain and what red looks like as a digital deal once it hits the brain. But as you can see, you mature that deal and you can then implant information into the brain as well as back up information from the brain. So you can take memories, and once you see them, you can copy them down to the to the real world and vice versa. If you want to learn karate, if you package and compartmentalize what karate looks like, you can just upload what karate is into your brain and you will just know stuff just by uploading it to that. Messaging and communicating. Right now we translate everything through analog, stuff like our ears, analog words, analog mouth, analog vocal cords, analog. If you have a message for Bob, you could just say the message in your head, the internal dialogue, get the chip to translate it to a digital signal and send it to Bob. And then Bob just receives the information, but he doesn't have to read the words. The words are just an idea that gets implanted into his head. So he just knows something that he doesn't know before. That'd be so cool that my wife could say, like, pick up milk when you're at the grocery store. And that'll arrive in my head as an idea, like, man, I think I should pick up milk right now. And it'll be interesting to see, as those things receive, our perceptions will change because we'll be less interpreters of an analog world and more just knowers of things that we connect to. And it's a dynamic that's really cool. And I want to be on the forefront of that, where we can implant ideas into heads. And maybe we'll talk a little about the security implications of that going forward. But right now, it's just a cool thing to think about how we could learn and know things in the future. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. We talk about things that are happening in science, tech, technology, business, physics, the whole shoot and match here. Anything that's rolling around in your head, feel free to hit me up with questions on text message if you'd like, 330-333-1570. Keep that number in your phone. I find myself when I'm driving around listening to the other hosts here, it's cool to be able to chime in. Even if I don't have time for a complete conversation, I can at least like snark at the host and send them something. Text message 330-333-1570. This show is brought to you by Youngstown Computer. So we will hope that if there's any a computer situation, something arises that you need some expertise in the computer industry, it's helpful to know like a Rolodex of people you trust in every industry, whether it be, you know, somebody who does landscaping or plumber or accountant, all the professional services. It's helpful to know someone who you trust. And we really appreciate over the years of you making Youngstown Computer that go-to computer company in our area. Phone number 330-259-7278. We ask you write that number down on a sticky note, stick it on the side of your computer, and then when something arises, you can give us a call. If you do have a need right now, call our office, 330-259-7278. Rich is going to be seeing a couple people before the holiday, Monday, Tuesday of next week, but he does appointments only, so make sure you call, set something up with him, and he'll do his best to help you out. Again, write that number down, so in the future, if you do have something, you know how to get a hold of us. And we do appreciate all of our supporters over the years. You're much appreciated. Let's go to the phones, 330-729-9977. Let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Hi, good afternoon. Quick question about computer use.
Yes.
My typical program is to turn a computer on in the morning, get financial data, and so on and so forth. run it for maybe an hour or two and then shut it down, and then later on in the evening, repeat that. And I'm wondering if it would be better just to leave the computer run all day. Do you have any feel about that?
Okay, so my official response to that, and that people have asked me that question since the very beginning, and it I believe it is a coin flip. Okay, so you have two costs here. You have the cost of electricity for running an electronic device, and then you have the failure rate that is increased by turning things on and off. In our experience, usually if something happens, it's usually when power is applied and power is removed. That's why during electrical storms and blackouts and the surges of electricity that come into computers is what is the most harmful. So I would always appreciate a computer that's running and left to be running more than not, because you avoid that. You avoid the starting it, power being applied, power being disengaged. I think it's easier on the system to have that happen. The components that can break when that happens last longer. Now, all of the analog components like fans and some mechanical hard drives, the longer you run those, the quicker they go away. So you're going to pay more in electricity, and some of the more expensive components are not going to go bad as often because you're not supplying the power. But some of the other devices may last less because they're constantly running. Now, as things change, like we are more, you know, less physical hard drives. So running a solid state drive doesn't affect the longevity of the drive. What kills the drive is usage of the storage, the method of storage on there. And that's even, hard to measure. So I would say my official deal is I would typically leave the computer running, but turn off the monitor after a certain amount of time. So you're not really allowing it to hibernate. You're not really just hitting power or shutdown. The computer's running, and you have to pay attention to the consumption of how much power that is consuming. Most of the computers now have a 220-watt power that it's consuming. So think about it like you've got a floodlight that's basically running all the time. As long as you're okay with fronting the electricity cost, that would be my recommendation. The second step down would be maybe putting it into, you know, a sleep mode, because when you put it in sleep mode, it does consume less power and it more gracefully goes in and out of power usage modes. Okay. And I think the technology has gotten better at coming in and out of those modes without shocking the system, and literal and figuratively, that it applies, you know, a surge of power to power things up. I think it's better at coming up a little bit easier on the system. So I'm still going to believe that it is a coin flip at this point, but I think it's starting to go on the other side, where the saving of electricity is probably better than running the equipment. I don't think it poses as big a risk as it did at one time, especially with hibernation or sleep mode that does it a little bit more gracefully. So that's my official response. I leave mine on all the time, but it probably should probably do sleep or hibernation if I were to do this metric again. 330-729-9977. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your show where we can talk about things that are happening in technology, and that's very loose. We could talk anything about the technology, the hardware. We could talk about the software. We could talk about how you're consuming it and using it, and I can run little impromptu polls just to kind of gauge what you guys are thinking, because you are super helpful at kind of like giving me some cultural insight. As to what you're doing and what's important to you and how you're using this stuff. We do a fair bit of explanation on cutting the cable, but I think a lot of you have already done that and already sort of using the buffet of content distribution, where you get to pick whatever you want to watch from whatever network you want to watch, and you're not beholden to one company to distribute it. And so tell me what you're watching. Text me and let me know what shows you are watching. I do this every once in a while. I will go on social media and just ask my friends what they're watching on Netflix or Prime or whatever. And I'll sometimes be able to pick out a show and we'll get to binge on it for a little while where I get caught up. And I like, some of the best shows that I've come across get canceled, and like I'll get totally enveloped in the show, and it'll end abruptly without any kind of end. But lately, you know, I've been like really gravitating towards stupid, mindless shows, things that are just kind of funny and humorous, and I don't really need to follow a plot or get, you know, over invested in characters or anything like that. The one show that I'm watching right now, and I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name on the air, so I'm going to say S Creek. That show where, you know, the super wealthy family gets in a bunch of trouble and they have to relocate to a city that's named after a guy with the last name that begins with that S. And it's kind of funny. It's a little comedy, and it has the Gene Levy, I think, is in it, the guy from American Pie. Good. It's a funny thing. But if text me and let me know what you're watching on whatever networks is maybe a. We can kind of gauge what the interest is of the audience. Someone texted us that I don't see the point in text messaging. No one reads them anyway. So this is a little dichotomy where I read it, and I actually have a tablet that is set up always on it. A lot of the late show entries I don't get a chance to because I sort of look at commercial breaks, and if we get towards the end of the show, I'll miss some at the very end. But I pretty much keep an eye on it all show long, and there are very few that I won't read. Maybe the other show host, everybody runs their show a little bit differently, where some people are real heavy on the feedback and the interactions, and some are more monologue, where you want to give commentary on what you see, and it's not needed or wanted or desired by the host. But I would still say, you know, use a text messaging system to get your words out, because a lot of times I'll look back through on a show that's, you know, especially like Dimitri. When our dude Dimitri comes on here, I love reading the text messages that come in during his program, because you guys are off the charts. You guys are off the hook as far as your opinion on he's a bomb thrower. So it's one of those things where it's very interesting to see what you guys feel about Dimitri stuff. Let's see. Dave needs to have the home show guys. Condenser mic. Okay, so that is another thing. I've noticed our standards for the quality of audio it's changing a little bit. Where on you go to a network television, and they're so easy to be able to do like a Zoom meeting quality interview, and some of these sound really really rough. And But it's us as consumers now. It doesn't even faze me anymore. I mean, I'm just almost expecting to be able to hear a professional commentator's cat to walk across the set while they're doing a mid thing, or a kid to walk in, or something like that. Just because people are at home doing this stuff now, so our tolerances went way down or up, I should say, on what we're likely to see or hear. My favorite was when that guy was doing that really professional one from home, and like the kid like strutted in there. And the babysitter came flying in there, and then a little baby and a little thing walker came in. That was the most hilarious thing, because like the dad was even like pushing the kid out of the way by his face. It was just so funny, because now we wouldn't even care. The dad wouldn't even care. It's not like a lack of professionalism that you're doing your interview from home, because everybody's doing it. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have a passport external hard drive, and it got dropped. And now if I plug it into the computer, all it does is click inside there. Are you able to get the information out of it?
Sometimes. And if the controller on the drive is bad, we either have to find a controller and assemble it, like put it together. But if it's clicking, it usually means that there's a physical problem now with the actual drive, and we have to send it away to a place that will disassemble it in a clean room and then manually read the drives and try to recover data from it. It's not a cheap endeavor either. So only the people who go that route are stuff that's super important on that drive.
Wow. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of pictures and videos that I really, really would like to keep. So when you say not a cheap endeavor, like how much?
So they give it. Okay, so basically how this works is we will send it off to that company that does the clean room. And I think they charge $100 no matter what happens to it. And after they get it disassembled, after they take a look at it, then they'll give you a quote on that drive, how expensive it's going to be. Sometimes we've seen them that are $300 or $400. Some of them have been $2,000 and everything in between. But you're really only out $100 or so to see what it's going to cost to get that data off of there.
Well, that would be worth it. There's stuff on there that's completely irreplaceable.
Okay.
So I really, really would like to do it. For $100, I would go for that.
Okay, well, why don't you call call our office, 330-259-7278, and then leave a message for Rich to get back with you. Monday, he'll give you a call and coordinate getting the drive from you. And that's all he'll do is we're going to send it in with the $100 and some and then wait for the quote, and then we'll let you know what they're charging for it.
You broke up there a little bit.
Okay, Kevin, I'm going to... I will have you listen here on the radio side. 330-259-7278. Leave a message for Rich, and then coordinate with him, get the drive dropped off, and then he'll send it away. The process takes a couple weeks because we have to mail it out. They have to put it in there. And with the holiday, I wouldn't expect probably to hear anything until probably the first week of December. But call our office and get something set up with Rich to get the drive away from them. And then, like I said, we'll get it mailed off to the company, and we'll kind of coordinate and see what they say. We don't mark up the... We're not going to mark up the service. They actually give us a wholesale rate so that they just quote us their retail rate, and then we just get the difference makes it worthwhile to coordinate the shipping and receiving. So again, 330-259-7278 is the phone number. So let's see. The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. That was someone from the text messaging side said that that's what they are watching on streaming here. And what's cool too is that you're able because of streaming that if I used to hate having to take the day that something would air and either record it and whatever. Now you could just go and take a series that maybe you passed on 5 years ago, be able to visit those and usually for nothing, go back through old episodes and kind of get to current. And so that was the same thing. Like most of, when this S Creek show was going on, it was pretty popular, and I sometimes now have to avoid people that are talking about a show that I have not been caught up on because they're going to throw spoilers out there and then I'm not going to want to watch the rest of it. But I don't watch a whole lot of TV, but it's nice to be able to cherry pick what lots of people found entertaining. And that way, if I'm going to do a couple hours a week in television watching, I don't have to dabble. But remember, like it used to be, you get the channel flicker and just go through networks until you find something and you'd have to actually watch it. It was so much harder to come across new content because of, there just wasn't many sources. You had to do the TV guide, and that gave you some write-ups on some new stuff, but that was the extent of it. But now, you can use social media to do all of your hand-picking for you. So that's kind of cool. So text me, 330-333-1570, and let me know what you're watching. Being sort of like a traveler and an RV person, as we go sort of around the country, the internet is still a pretty valuable thing, even when you're traveling. I like to disconnect and not use as much technology as I possibly can when I'm traveling. Give me a break from it. But you find it hard that some of the stuff, even like watching TV or watching sporting events or something like that, when you're on the road, really requires you to have some kind of dedicated internet. And I will tell you that around the country, some of these areas just don't have proper exposure to internet. So I know a lot of you are suffering around the country with just not having a good connection. What's nice though is with satellite internet, when Starlink, and I totally will be a subscriber when this comes out, is that you're basically, no matter where you go, there's going to be a satellite overhead close enough for you to get an internet connection, and hopefully it will be as at least quick enough to do streaming like we do at home. I don't know how expensive it's going to be. I don't know what the capacities are going to be because it's not in its final form now. So they're under beta testing, and they're calling the beta program better than nothing or something like that. And so you're getting the indication that they're offering it to beta testers, and they're not really, guaranteeing results. I mean, sometimes you're going to have an outage because something miscalculated or it's early on in the beta program. So, like I said, when it's gone consumer ready, I'll be a subscriber and I'll be able to tell you if in the middle of the hills of Tennessee, if I have an internet connection that can do anything with, or if they have data caps that are even worthwhile. You can blow through 4 gigs of data watching a sporting event. And with caps being around, I think AT&T is around 35 gigs in a month, and Verizon is around between 10 and 20 gigs a month. You can, in one weekend watching sports, be done with your data caps for the rest of the month. So you eat into that pretty good. So again, I don't know what data caps are going to be with Starlink, if they're going to be any. And that's what I'm looking for someone to, and this is me complaining a little bit, but utilities have always done this, where they will not make an innovative pricing change unless they absolutely have to. I mean, right now they would be charging $1,000 a month for Yellow Pages ads, right? So I'm happy that nobody looks at Yellow Pages anymore, because they were, as an early business that paid exorbitant amount of money for Yellow Pages ad, I'm so glad that they don't get to collect that anymore, right? Because that was a little bit of putting the screws down to companies. That was, I know it was fair market, and I know people were willing to pay it, but that was a lot of money at the time, paying $600 a month in the stupid Yellow Pages ad because you had to, right? And so I know utility companies like the AT&Ts, like the Verizons, are not going to make it's going to be profit centers until it's not a profit center anymore. And one thing I would like to happen, and again, like there was a one time where a long distance call would cost you money, right? And now long distance calls, can you imagine if you made a long distance call and you had to pay per minute for it? I mean, nobody, you know, today's generation would be like, you know, that can't even be a thing. That's criminal. Throw somebody in jail for it. So eventually a data cap won't be a thing. But it's not going to be a utility company that makes that happen. It's going to be the challenge that makes that something that they were charging for before free of charge. So I'm looking forward when data caps and service outages in certain part of the areas, it's just not going to be a thing. It's going to totally remake how internet is distributed. And you heard me back a couple years ago when net neutrality was a thing. Where I was scared of net neutrality as being sort of like a dampening of the innovation curve. I wanted companies to have a profit incentive so they keep making stuff, right? And sort of that goes along with all of the technology. As soon as you take the profit incentive out of something, people stop developing. And at the same time, you're hearing me talk now about making internet not exclusive, where it's more competitive. So both can be true at the same time, where I want really competitive pricing, where companies can't conspire to keep prices inflated, because it's not like, you know, at a time nobody would go to a population of five and run coaxial cable. You'd never be able to make your money back by the infrastructure, right? And the only way that they were able to do that was to extend exclusivity so companies could not come in there unless they were the company that installed the hardware. Now with satellites, I mean, what are you going to do? It flies over your head. You can't. There's no such thing as exclusivity, but it kind of breaks that consolidation of single company coverage and extends it so that there's more competition within those networks. And that's something that I do believe. Here's another text message. Such great programming on Hulu and YouTube to unwind with. I love Matt's Off-Road Recovery channel on YouTube. And just seeing Utah and great people helping people is enjoyable. Plus, I love the Jeep, and I love the series on Hulu. Season 9 is new in December. And what's cool about that, too, is think about how much programming that would have been low-budget, low-dollar individuals that get huge amount of exposure, right? And they grow their channels up because they put good content. Half the crap that movies and music and television shows are crap because they don't get... they don't get to not be made if they're not awesome, right? They're being propped up by the houses rather than like a YouTube channel. If Bob goes out there and gets some footage and puts something together and you watch it, he gets to collect the royalties on putting out content that lots of people like actually watching, not just that they happen to cram them on some kind of channel on cable. And then, you know, they got sort of like revenue based on overall subscribers. So I love that new model, and I think it's great. Here's another texter said, currently watching This Is Us, Without a Trace, MASH, rewatching old episodes of SWAT, Madam Secretary, and Superstore. My wife is really digging the whole This Is Us thing, and I'm not a real big fan of it because, number one, She cries pretty much every episode. And I don't know if that is on purpose, where they make every episode sort of like an emotional cluster so that every one who wants to cry has the ability to cry. But it's just a very sad, sad, you know, situational, I don't even know what to call it. But yeah, I wish it wasn't like that. But I don't know, especially women really like that show. And you're not alone. But that's cool that you have access to even some of those older shows, and you can go back. I'd love to watch some of the old 80s episodes of, like, Knight Rider and Airwolf and some of those older things. But just nostalgia day around here. Text me, 330-333-157. You got one little segment on the other side of this break. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I'm Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer. And let me give you the number out for Youngstown Computer. If a computer need arise, please write this number down and give Rich a call in the residential, or give myself a call on commercial. Number is 330-259-7278. Get something scheduled. This came in through a text messaging. Would love a discussion on streaming, what people like, dislike, different services, costs, and value. And and honestly, the next program that we do on here, let's dedicate some time to do this. So if you want to get information to me, and then I will stockpile it. We're going to take next week off, so we're not going to be here over the holiday weekend, and then we'll resume the following week. But that would be a good show to be able to do, where we'll outline. I will make a list of the different services. A lot of you don't even know some of these exist. But here's sort of the premise, and I'll give you a little bit of a summary of some of them. So really, if we're used to getting our television content either with an antenna, that basically you put a little digital antenna, or you have an aerial antenna, you bring the feed in, and then you have a little tuner that basically allows you to switch channels and from the different frequencies that are being broadcast. A lot of you have digital. You can get like 5 or 6 channels here in Youngstown, and you can also, on the bigger antennas, get feeds from other markets like Cleveland and Pittsburgh, or somewhere that's within 60 or 70 miles of wherever the antenna is. And then the second part is you have the cable, which basically the content comes through a coaxial cable, and then you have a tuner box that translates the signals that are coming over your cable or the copper into different channels, and you display it on your television. That was typical. That was normal, how people got their feeds. Now, with the internet, you can bring in digital content and stream content right to your television. So what it requires is some kind of interface. Some of our televisions have smart capabilities that are built in. Some of them you can build, can attach some kind of box. So a lot of the hardware that you need, if you do not have a smart TV, but you have an HDMI input, you can hook up a Roku, a Fire Stick, an Apple TV, a Chromecast, and several others. A Roku. Maybe I already said that. But anyway, you can take an actual physical piece of hardware and connect that sucker to the internet, and that device will actually download content and display it to your television. Now, each one of those devices you can run apps on, aside from the Chromecast. So the Apple TV has little apps that you can run and display content. Fire Stick has different apps you can run, and the Roku has different apps. So, in like my last texter said, if you had YouTube television, and that's the one I'm currently using, by the way. I use Sling TV, I use Hulu, I use Amazon Prime, I use YouTube TV, and I'm right now have been using YouTube TV, and it's filling all of my needs right now. So that would be a good consideration. Again, we're going to dedicate a whole show to this, so don't take notes on this one. Wait until we get back, and we'll give you a full review of what myself and other people are using to get their contents. But if you want to start previewing it, first purchasing TVs that have this stuff built in are probably your best way, because you don't have to manage multiple remotes and have different devices and plug it in and connect wires. It's already built into the TV. That's probably your best bet. I bought a Samsung not too long ago, and it had all of the stuff in there. So that's my favorite way of doing it. I don't have to mess with it. On the other TVs, I have a different Samsung that's a little bit older, and I have a Fire Stick hooked up to it. I have an Apple TV hooked up to it, and I have a Chromecast hooked up to it. And so I previewed all of them, and they're all decent and have different deals. My motorhome actually has all Chromecast, so I bring all my content on one of my devices, and I just throw the content out to the TV rather than every TV being able to connect to the internet, because they're kind of savages when it comes to data consumption, and I just don't want to burn through all of my data just to have devices connected all the time. Text message: Joe, a relative passed away recently, and his financial stuff is on his computer, and just before he passed, he changed his passwords but didn't get to write it down in records. Is there any way for his wife to get access to the computer to get his information? It really depends. Some cases, yes, we can, you know, change passwords and get into stuff if we've got, you know, because they'll do some security challenges to be able to get in. And sometimes if it's on purpose encrypted down, there's really no way of doing it. But call our office, 330-259-7278. We'll take a look at it and see how much of the stuff we can get access to. All right, we're going to be gone for 2 weeks here until next Saturday. Have a great holiday, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN.